Welcome to part three of our special series featuring American Cassette Ministries Associate Speaker, Pastor Richard O'Phill. In this series entitled Plain Talk, Pastor O'Phill is discussing some of the specific problems and challenges facing Christian men and women, the young and the old, the liberal and the conservative. Showing us how the principles of God's Word are relevant for the 90s, once again, here is Pastor O'Phill and Plain Talk to Youth.
As the pastor and his wife were singing the special music, I couldn't help but look up at their hair. Believe it or not, mine used to be that color. For those of you who've just met me for the first time, I wasn't born old. I was actually, at one time, I was 18. But not for long. I soon became 21. And so I'm really all of those ages, but more. And I've made it to 49. The reason I say that is because when we talk to young people, plain talk to young people, they look at us and they say, well, how could you ever understand what young people are all about? You were born old. And I could understand why you would think that, because that's what I thought about my grandmother. She's been old, and she was old from the time I first knew her. But I have realized since then that she wasn't born that way. She was just as young as we ever were, and it's something to think about. And of course, that's the good news. The good news was that I used to be 18. The bad news is that someday you'll be 49. Needless to say, life is not something that we volunteered for. And contrary to popular belief, the stork didn't bring us. Or mom and dad didn't get us from the cabbage patch. We didn't even get to choose. Not only did we not get to choose whether we were going to be born, but we didn't get to choose who our parents were going to be, or we didn't get to choose the circumstances of our birth. But that's no matter, I guess, because the reality of it all is that here we are. Here's me, and here's you. And before I get into what I'm going to talk to you about today, I want to just give you an orientation. So what have we said so far? Here we are. Now, what's going on? Let me give you a little background to this. A long time ago, far away from here, there was a great war. And I'm not talking about the First World War or the Second World War or any wars that they've had since then. But I'm talking about the first war that was ever fought. It was a war fought long ago and far away, and it was fought in heaven. And the one that started it all, his name in those days was Lucifer. Lucifer is a master of disguise. Now you see him, now you don't. He is, in fact, generic. Do you use these terms these days? We talk about brand name and generic. Lucifer is generic evil. But he has many brand names. He has many brand names. Some of his brand names are devil, accuser, adversary, snake, dragon. Then he's got some others that are more up to date. Illicit sex, love of money, and pride. Sometimes, believe it or not, this Lucifer even calls himself Jesus. Sometimes he calls himself the church. Most of the time, what you see is not what you get. In fact, he's a master at what they call bait and switch. Have you ever heard of that? It's where you try to offer somebody one thing, and then when the person comes up to take it, you change. Let me tell you about who the devil is. The reason I'm talking this way is because in the papers recently, we've been reading a bit about these Satanism. Haven't you been reading about this? About Satanism and those who have actually given themselves over apparently to worship him. When I got to reading about what these Satanists do, I began to realize more than ever before some of the characteristics or the kind of a being, or if you want to say it this way, the kind of a person that the devil is. The devil is a psychopathic killer. I don't know if you know what that means. He is also a compulsive liar. He is a kleptomaniac. You know what that means? He steals all the time. That's what he's for. He's a psychopathic killer. He's a compulsive liar. He's a kleptomaniac. And I don't have to tell you, he's a sex pervert. And once he even murdered the one who created him. How does he feel about you and about me? Frankly speaking, he wants to color us dead. I'm mentioning this business that we're reading about these days about Satanism and those who are involved in it. Can't you see what kind of a being that Satan is? Because when you read about what they do, what do? They rape each other. They murder each other. In fact, they must have been the ones that originated the term, eat your heart out. But let me tell you who Satan hates most. The one he hates most has many names, just like Satan has many names. But the one he hates most has names like Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, Jesus, and the Messiah. And let me tell you about Jesus, what kind of a person he is. He is merciful, gracious, long-suffering, and abundant in goodness and truth. This war is not over that began long ago and far away. But everybody, most everybody, I should say, knows who's going to win. But Lucifer is sending one suicide attack after another against God. And finally, before it's all over, he himself will launch a suicide attack himself against God. And he will commit, as we would say, a bonsai or a Harry Carey. And that'll be the end of him. How does God feel about it? God is not willing that what? Any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Well, I just told you that. That's kind of the orientation course. And that tells us where we are from here. But what I really wanted to talk to you about this morning was some famous sayings of young people. The first famous saying of young people is, I'm tired of people always telling me what to do. Have you heard that one? In fact, I'm not even sure that that's just a famous saying for young people. I think people tend to say that all through their lives. I'm tired of people always telling me what to do. I'm not sure that this means that when they go to work on the job, that they're tired of people telling them what to do. Because if you went to work for somebody and he didn't tell you what to do, there wouldn't be any work. So it can't mean that. I don't think that means that when you go to school that you're tired of the teacher giving you assignments, because if you went to school and they didn't give you any assignments, there wouldn't be any school. I don't think that means that when you go to play a game that you're tired of the referee refereeing the game, because if there was no referee and there was no rules, you couldn't play. I think when a young person says, I'm tired of people always telling me what to do, what he really means is, I'm tired of people telling me what I ought to be. I want to decide myself what I am and what I want to be. You know, I think there's nothing wrong with that. Somewhere between the ages of 12 and 20, a young person ought to get tired of people telling him what he's going to be. In fact, believe it or not, young people, that's the way it's meant to be. When we start off in our lives, we're helpless. We have to depend on others to take care of us and to protect us. But when we get to be, let's say, I don't know the exact date or the exact age, we get to a certain age, and it is important that we begin to think to ourselves, Not what does mommy want me to be, or daddy, or mom, or dad, or whoever it is, but it's what am I myself going to be? God meant for every person to choose for himself what he's going to be. And so in a way, if you've come to the place in your life in which you're tired of people trying to tell you what you ought to be, hey, that's wonderful. That means you're on track. In fact, if a person gets up to be 30 years old or 35 years old and he still hasn't decided what he's going to be, the kind of person he's going to be, if he's still looking to his friends or his mother or father to take care of that, something's wrong. Because God gave us the power of choice, so that we can decide for ourselves who we're going to be. But I think it's kind of, what should I say, inconsistent. We're not always fair. Because we do reach that time in our lives, let's say between 12 and 20 or whenever it is, and we get really fed up with our parents or the authority figures in our lives telling us the kind of people we ought to be. We get fed up with that. We say, I don't think that ought to be. And I told you already, I agree with that. But the problem is that during that time, when we begin to not appreciate maybe the fact that our parents are telling us what we ought to be, we begin to fall under the influence of our friends and those around us. Have you ever heard of the expression peer pressure? Now, there's nothing wrong with peer pressure. Peer pressure is like talking about atmospheric pressure. Atmospheric pressure is the pressure of the atmosphere all around us. Hey, you're going to have atmospheric pressure. You're going to have peer pressure. There's nothing wrong with that. I'll tell you what's wrong. What's wrong is as I mentioned to you before, if a young person gets to the age of 25 and he still is not exercising his power of choice to be what he wants to be, something's wrong with him. But by the same token, if a young person is 16 or 17 or 18 and the people who are his friends and his environment are telling him what he ought to be, the kind of person he ought to be, something's wrong with him. Because we're not talking about peer pressure, we're talking about peer dependency. A young person who at 21 years of age is dependent upon his dad to decide what kind of person he's going to be, something's wrong with him. But by the same token, a young person who's 21 years of age, who's dependent upon his fellow friends and the people around him to decide what he's going to be, something's wrong with him. Because God meant for you and I to have the power of choice to choose for ourselves the kind of people that we want to be. I can remember when I was in college. And I was, of course, studying for the ministry in those days. And I was raised in an Adventist home. In fact, my father is a minister. He's retired now. So there I was, raised in a minister's home. And believe it or not, I always wanted to be a minister. Except for a little while, I wanted to be a fireman. And I think I wanted to be a farmer somewhere along the line. I don't know if I ever wanted to be a cowboy or not, but maybe so for a little while. But anyway, it was mostly I wanted to be a minister. But so I went to college and began to study for the ministry. And everything was going fine. And I don't know what happened to me, but it must have been, I don't know whether it was the, it must have been the second year that I was in college. I began to feel like that life had cheated me. Now, you're going to think this is really crazy what I'm about to say, but I began to think, I want to try out some things and just to see what it's like. Now, fortunately, back in those days at least, I guess one of the most daring things that I finally got to was to try to eat a hamburger or something. You know, I thought I was really going off the deep end. But I would just try this and I would try that and try this. In fact, I can remember in my experience there at college, I began to have real trouble on Friday night. Maybe Friday night was the symbol that the Sabbath was coming and it was the focus of something that had been in my life. And I used to get just almost burned up on Friday night. I would just get mad on Friday night. Well, this kind of began to work on me for a while, and so I can remember, finally I couldn't stand it anymore, and I went to the dean of men, And the dean of men that we had in those days, he was an enormous guy. Dean Lowen was his name. And I can remember going into Dean Lowen's office one day, and I said, "Dean," I said, "I'm fed up." And he didn't say much. I suppose he'd heard something like that before. And I said, "You know what I'd like to do?" I said, "I'd like to just give it all up and just go out and do what I want to do." And, you know, he didn't say much. When I finished, you know what he said? He said, "Go ahead." Well, I suppose that I wanted him to plead and say, "Don't do that, please. You can't do that. That's wrong." And all. But he didn't. He said, "Go ahead. If that's the way you feel, go ahead." Well, I thank God for what he said, because it was just what I needed. Because when he said, "Go ahead," suddenly I decided I didn't want to go. See what he had done to me? I needed to be broken loose from the decision of what I should be that had been made for me by others. It is necessary that all of us, if you please, break free or transfer from the control of the will of others to the control of our own decision-making process. That is completely necessary. It's the will of God. It has to be. And of course, when he said to me at that time, he said, "Go ahead," I said, "No way, I'm staying." But what was the difference? Where before, I felt oppressed and under the control of the authority in my life and of others, suddenly, I knew that I had made up my own mind. And I was going to stay. And so that's the way it goes. If you're tired of people trying to make you into something, that's great. Because it's important that you exercise the power of choice in your own life. There's another famous saying of young people, and you've heard them say this before. It's, "What I do is my own business." Now, this is probably what happens after this person feels that he's got the power of choice. Then he says, "What I do is my own business. My life is mine. I can live it like I want." Have you heard that one? Now, this is where the things get a little more complicated. I just told you that it is necessary and it is the plan of God that you have the power of choice to decide for yourself. And that I have the power of choice to decide for myself who I will be. Then does it follow that I can say, "What I do is my business. I can live my life as I want"? There the situation changes. Listen to me now. You don't think God would give the power of choice to 6 billion people, all living in the same planet, and then say to all of them, "Go for it"? I mean, what kind of stuff is that? I got to thinking about this matter of the power of choice. I don't know if some of the young people who are here today have driver's license, but I think we're represented. There are younger people here who are either have a driver's license or are looking forward to it. Let me tell you something about a driver's license. I got to thinking about this. What does the driver's license have to do with the power of choice? The driver's license is the license to drive. When you've got a driver's license, you can drive. But hang on. When you've got a driver's license, does that mean that you can drive wherever you want? What if you want to drive on the other side of the road? Does the driver's license give me the authority to drive wherever I want, whenever I want, and however I want? Not at all. No, I have the authority to drive. I have the freedom to drive, but not the freedom to drive whenever I want, wherever I want, and however I want. No, it makes no sense. God could never give the power of choice to 6 billion people and then say, "Go for it." If He's going to give us this wonderful thing for ourselves that makes us, the power of choice, then He has to give along with it certain obligations. And just as soon then as you get on your own and you've got the power of choice, then God says, along with His power of choice, you must accept responsibility. And you must be accountable for the choices that you make. I was on an airplane not long ago, and as the passengers came on, everybody came on and were taking their seats, and suddenly the thing kind of stopped. Not the plane stopped, we hadn't left yet, but the passenger flow stopped onto the plane, and people kind of stepped back. And onto the plane came a man with a hose in his nose, just one of these little breather hoses. And somebody was carrying a tank of oxygen. And they were kind of standing back, and people were squeezing up. And so this tank of oxygen, this man, and he just kind of came on slowly with a hose in his nose, and there was a woman accompanying him. And I looked at him, and I didn't ask any questions, but I guessed. I guess that maybe this man was a smoker at one time. He knew he shouldn't smoke. I suppose he did, because he must have heard by now how that smoking kills people. But he probably said, I don't care. He probably said, it's my life. I can live it the way I want to. Now, I wish that that was true, but obviously it wasn't. Because if this man could have just smoked, you know, and in a place far off and far away, and there was nobody else in the world, it would have been true. Go ahead and smoke yourself into oblivion. It makes no difference. But just as soon as he decided to smoke, what happened? His whole family begins to get involved. One day he has a heart attack. And then he ends up with a pipe in his nose and a jar of oxygen, and his wife, who deserves to lead her own life and to enjoy life, suddenly she's worried out of her head about her husband, and instead of being able to enjoy herself, no, she has to carry the oxygen bottle. And instead of us being able to get on the plane and not worry about anything and sit down, no, we've got to scrunch back and stand back while this guy who just wants to live his life the way he lives it, I'm sorry, there's no such person. I guess that maybe this man was a smoker at one time. He knew he shouldn't smoke. I suppose he did, because he must have heard by now how that smoking kills people. But he probably said, I don't care. He probably said, it's my life. I can live it the way I want to. Now, I wish that that was true. But obviously, it wasn't. Because if this man could have just smoked, you know, and in a place far off and far away, and there was nobody else in the world, it would have been true. Go ahead and smoke yourself into oblivion. It makes no difference. But just as soon as he decided to smoke, what happened? His whole family begins to get involved. One day he has a heart attack. And then he ends up with a pipe in his nose and a jar of oxygen. And his wife, who deserves to lead her own life and to enjoy life, suddenly she's worried out of her head about her husband, and instead of being able to enjoy herself, no, she has to carry the oxygen bottle. And instead of us being able to get on the plane and not worry about anything and sit down, no, we've got to scrunch back and stand back while this guy who just wants to live his life the way he lives it, I'm sorry, there's no such person. It's just a fact of the matter that there's not a person in this world who can say, it's my life, I can live it as I want. Oh yes, you can live it as you want, but everything we do, young people and brothers and sisters, everything we do, every move we make, almost every expression on our face influences the person next to us who's nearest and dearest to us. Every decision, there's no such thing as a person who just lives his own life. I was sitting on a plane on another trip, and the person next to me, we began to talk, and it was a young lady, a young business lady. And I don't know how the subject came up, but she said, I'm going to start voting for the legislators who believe in legalizing drugs. And of course, that was, I'd never talked to a person like that before, but I tried not to faint. I just kept, I tried not to get mad or go crazy or climb the walls or jump out of the airplane. I just thought, very interesting. So that's the way she feels about it. So she said, yes. She said, as long as you can't control drugs, we're not making any progress with drugs, we might as well legalize it and get it over with. And so I thought, well, this is going to be an interesting conversation, but I will respect how she feels about it, but I'll ask her a few questions. Because I can remember, and so do you, you're aware of the fact that when people actually, even without drugs, when they get drunk and they go down the highway, they kill people. In fact, where I live in the United States, 50,000 people a year are killed on the highway, and a large portion of these are due to the fact that people are drunk when they drive. And those that don't die as a result of this, there are many tens of thousands who are maimed. So a person wakes up in the morning or sometime during the day, he says, I think I'm going to drink. And he goes out and he drives and kills somebody I love. So I said to her, okay, all right, I go along with that. If you want to legalize drugs and these kind of things and make it fair to do that, I would say yes under one condition. That the person who's taking drugs or drinking alcohol, when he goes out into life, whatever he does to anybody else gets done to him. I was interested to see, what she'd think about that. In other words, if you're under the influence of drugs and you kill somebody, you get killed. If you're under the influence of drugs and somebody's legs get chopped off, they chop off yours. Of course, that's a little bit of the way it was in the Old Testament, wasn't it? It was kind of based on that. Do whatever you want, but whatever you do comes back to you. She didn't jump out of the plane or climb the walls or get mad or south. She just looked at me and she said, yeah, I think that would be fair. And I said, well, that would be the only condition by which I would ever agree to legalizing drugs. Whatever you do to somebody gets done to you. Anyway, that would be the way it would be in our society, but in a real way, that's the way it's going to be in the Day of Judgment. If we could only just live our lives alone, it wouldn't matter. But because there's not just one of us, because there's so many of us, and because we're packed so close together, your mother is packed very close together to you, your father, your brothers, your sisters, your wife, your husband, your children, we're all packed together. And because of this situation, when one moves, we all feel it. And so I got to thinking about this. I thought, in the Day of Judgment, God is going to judge us, if you please, and I say this, with tongue in cheek, God judges us not so much about what we did to ourselves, but by the fact that everything we did affected everybody else. A wild animal, because he's unpredictable, because he goes by instinct, he's either out in the wild, away from everybody, or he's locked up. Domestic animals we accept because we feel that we've tamed them. But I've been reading in the newspaper lately about these pit bulls. Have you been reading about those? I was reading where one man, he was saying, a pit bull is a wonderful thing and it's just such a nice family pet. But he says, of course, if my pit bull gets loose, he'll probably kill somebody. And so even when a domestic animal begins to misbehave, it either gets locked up, and if its offense is great enough, it's destroyed. And so I don't mean to be threatening today, but only to say it is true. It is true that God has given us the power of choice. You and I are free to make our own decisions to be whatever we want to be. But I am only saying this, that God is going to hold us accountable He gives us the choice, but he doesn't say, go for it. He says, hey, stay on the road. I know that there are many young people, and speaking of this, is I'm using the illustration of driving a car again. Many people, many young people, I guess, and even older ones, they want to prove that they're in control of their lives. And so when they take the wheel of their life, and they begin to drive the car of their life, and maybe their parents or their husband or wife or their influence has kind of kept things in the middle of the road. But as soon as they say, I'm in charge, what's the first thing they do? Take it off the road. And they think they've proved something. You know, and say, hey, I can drive. Well, if you can drive, then stay on the road. If when your parents are supervising your life is on the road, hey, that's where you need to be. Why do you go off the road to prove you can drive? When you drive off the road, young person, you're not proving you can drive, you're proving you can't. You may say, hey, I think you're saying two things today. You're telling me on one hand that God gives me the power of choice, that I'm supposed to have the power of choice, that I'm supposed to be able to do what I want to do, to decide what I'm going to be. And then you're saying, I really can't. Oh no, I don't think it's nearly as bad as we try to make it out. Basically, God gives us the power of choice and He lets us do everything that we could possibly imagine doing, except for 10 things. You know what I'm talking about, the 10 things. He says to you, young person, and to us older people, He says, hey, listen, do anything you want, but honor your parents and honor me, because after all, we're where you came from. I mean, that only makes sense. He says to us as young people, He says, do anything you want, but don't kill other people. And there's nothing wrong with that, is there? If I'm going to give you life, don't take away other people's lives. They have the same right to live. He says, do anything you want, but don't steal other people's things. He says, you got things you like, they got things they like. Keep your hands off their stuff, and they keep their hands off your stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. He says, do anything you want, but don't commit adultery. He says, that's not right. That's not fair. Taking advantage of other people like that. He says, do anything you want. He says, but don't covet. Don't go around wishing that in other words, work for your own stuff. But He says, by all means, do anything you want. And I'm glad for the Ten Commandments. What would you rather do? Would you rather have somebody tell you what you can't do or what you have to do? Huh? Which gives us the most freedom? So God says to us, He says, hey, you can do anything you want. Just don't do these little few little things. But then don't, you know, dress however way you want. Hey, if you like green, be greeny. If you like red, be red man. But keep your clothes on. He said, you made that way. Birds have feathers, dogs have fur, and I'm sorry you don't have what you were supposed to have, but so, you know, just to keep everything all right. You eat whatever you want, He says. Eat whatever you like, eat it. But don't eat stuff that kills you. You see, so I would much rather Him tell me what not to do than what to do. Because by Him telling me what not to do, I can understand that. But by not telling me what to do, He says, hey, you're free. Do your thing. I feel good about that. Of course, there's a lot of us, you know. We don't even have any good ideas. We're so used to other people making up our minds for us and telling us what not to do, is that we say, well, if I can't do that, what can I do? I heard a little thing, maybe you won't catch on to this, but it was a mother fish. Here the ocean is right outside the door here for us this morning. A mother fish was putting her baby fish outside to play. The mother fish said to the baby fish, honey, be a good boy and don't get out of the ocean. I think the ocean is enough for us. And so God is saying to us as young people and even us as older people, He said, come on, don't get out of the ocean of your creativity. all these marvelous abilities that I've given you. Just be free. Go all over. But just these 10 little things. Just don't fool with those. Let them be. You say, well, I'm not very creative, God. What can I do that would really make me happy? And so God says, let me give you some ideas. Whatever's true, whatever's honest, whatever's just, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever praises God and it's good news, it's virtuous, do it all. Enjoy yourself. When we play a sport, we don't make up the rules. They were already made when we started to play. And I want to tell you, young people, today that when we were born, we didn't ask to be born into this. We didn't start this war. It was going on when we came. It would be nice if we could have all come together at the same time and made up the rules. You know, you'd have felt you had a part. Unfortunately, we didn't even ask if we were, they didn't even ask us if we were going to play. We're here and they're playing. Everybody plays. But everybody doesn't make up the rules. The rules are already made up. The war is on, and we're all playing in it. As I was studying a little bit of, I shouldn't say studying, I was just reading in the paper a little bit about that Satanism business. I read where these people who become involved in Satanism, they sell their souls to the devil. Did you hear about that? And I thought to myself, isn't that amazing? That when you play on the devil's side, he demands that you give up that thing that's so precious to you, that makes you somebody, and that's your will. The willpower, the thing that I said in the beginning that God wants you to have, the thing that you need your parents to give you, the thing that you need people in your life to give to you, because your willpower is what makes you you. And I thought to myself, it's incredible, it's not right. That when you play the game with the devil, he takes away from you and me the very thing that makes us us. See, he says, when you play with me, you have to sell your soul to me. I take you over. And then I thought to myself, isn't that incredible? Because though you have to sell your soul, huh, either by contract, written contract, or implied contract, that the devil will take you over, but young person today, I want to tell you, God never will. Listen to me closely. You cannot sell your soul to God. He's not buying the soul. God will even never take over your willpower. See, the willpower, he wants you to have it. It's yours. God will never take you over. In fact, I think sometimes we're mistaken when we say, oh, I want God to take me over. He won't. I want to have God in my heart. Yes. But if you think that the time will ever come in which God will make your decisions for you, he won't. Because the marvelous thing about being a son and daughter of God is that right from here on out, he gives us the power of choice. The people in heaven, the people in the universe, when we're with Him forever, we will not have lost our power of choice, because our power of choice, Elder, is us. Those throughout the universe today, this very morning, who are serving God, the angels and the other beings and everybody else, are not serving God because they have to. But they're serving God because they want to. You see, God leaves you you. The devil destroys you. Those who are serving the devil today have no choice. They can't get away. See, you can sell your soul to the devil, but you can't sell your soul to God. You have to be continually giving it. And when you and I give something, it's like that thing that happened to me in college. They set me free. And now I was what I am. Because I want it to be. Those who are serving the devil are what they are because he's taken them over. He's thinking their thoughts. He's deciding what they're going to do. He's raping them. He's killing them.
He's eating their hearts out, literally.
Jesus says to those of us who are here today, my son, my daughter, give me your heart. But the wonderful thing about that is it is not permanent, see? It's ongoing. You keep being yourself. So not only do I give my heart to him this morning, but all day long. All day long. I have a choice to serve God all day long. And when temptations come to me and the devil wants to take me over, I just say no to him. See, I have my choice. And I say to God, God, I'm on your side. I have my choice. It's crazy. We're out of our mind when we think that God takes away our freedom of choice and the devil gives it to us. It's just the opposite. In him we have total freedom. On the other side, we have total slavery and death. In Jesus is life, and the devil is death. In Jesus is freedom, and the devil is slavery. Heavenly Father, O Lord, this morning we want to thank you for setting us free. Lord, that we can be free to be who we are. Oh, Lord, today we want to commit our lives to you. We recognize that you're not going to take us over or take us away, Lord, but that it's a continual choice. Father, protect us from that evil one, that master of disguises who is trying to take us away and to rape us and kill us, to eat our hearts out. Oh, Father, protect us with the holy angels. And we're looking forward to the time in which we can be safe with you, in which we will choose every day for all the days, for all eternity, to be with you and to love you as you love us. We're thankful for Jesus, that wonderful counselor, that mighty God, who is our everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. May he be close to us today. In his name we pray. Amen.
This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.